Giving and receiving is just like breathing. When you live to give love, it gives life meaning. There's feeling of kindness and love's inside us. Nobody can sell this or try to buy this, cause love is righteous and it might just save the whole world from this global crisis. So throw your hands up if you know what the time is. Open up your heart and let it shine the brightest.
Welcome to the What is Love Show on Radio Free Brooklyn. I'm acting as the host today. Sasha Sugar is away. Well, Sasha Sugar is away. So my name is VJR Nathan. And today with us on the What is Love Show is Pauline Sade, a Lebanese American artist, photographer, and world traveler based in New Jersey. She has deep connections to nature, spirituality, and the power of positivity. Her mission is to inspire others to travel for personal growth, adventure, and finding balance and purpose, love, and beauty in life. Welcome, Pauline.
Thank you so much. It's a great honor to be here today with you, Vijay. This is a great show that you're hosting today. So thank you.
Thank you. Such an important topic. Talk about love in all its forms and talk about your own journeys towards love and in love. So first of all, let's start a little bit about your personal journey. Tell us a little bit about where you were born and what your journey in childhood was like.
So yeah, I was born in 1981 in Deir al-Amar. Deir al-Amar means Monastery of the Moon in Lebanon. It's a UNESCO heritage site. So if you haven't heard about this place, I highly recommend that you Google it and learn a little bit about the history, because there's a lot of history about artists as well in that area. And I was born during the Civil War, and some of you who have probably never heard about Lebanon Civil War, it lasted for 15 years. From 1975 to 1990. So I kind of grew up really during the Civil War there. It was a challenging time, I would say, certainly. And the beautiful part, though, about, you know, looking back is that we spent a lot of times in the mountains when my father took us away to the mountains to get away from the war. And there I got to really connect to my heart space and to nature and to the mountains and to the beauty of nature. And that kind of got us away from the war at the time. And
I was going to say, it seems like connecting to nature is part of the way that you face some of these challenges, some of these larger challenges in your personal life. And if you can expand a little bit more on how you're able to face the kind of pressures and challenges of the Civil War. Not just connecting to nature, but that's part of it, but also some of the other things. Yeah. Go ahead. How are you able to find that strength to persevere?
That's a really good point, Vijay. So we draw a lot of our strength from our community, I would say. The love of our community and being there, our neighbors were really part of our family. Like whenever we needed a place or whenever we needed anything, it was kind of a reciprocal process with our community people, our family, our friends, our neighbors next door. We all kind of came together as one to go through and give each other strength during the war. It wasn't just like our family left alone on the side. It's just everyone coming together. And certainly I remember a lot spending time just drawing and just, you know, getting away from what's going on the outside and focusing on my creative process. And, you know, as we know, for me, creative process is being in your heart space and, you know, focusing on the positivity side of life.
Yeah, and it seems like just for the listeners, you know, this time spent in the mountains had its share of hardships, because I understand the conditions were not, you know, not conducive. I mean, you had no electricity and water, so you talk a little bit about how that kind of was able to, you know, these things we think of as luxury, we think of as like, we take for granted in our society today. And how these luxuries were luxuries for you, and how How did you cope with that? Talk a little bit about that, yeah.
Yeah, just to kind of walk us a little bit back in my memory and just thinking about what we went through. During the Civil War, you know, even water, the simplicity of just getting clean water and food on the table was a difficulty for my family. And we learned earlier on that the element of water is sacred, you know, to have that, to quench your thirst, to have water, to, you know, take a shower. Water was gold to us. So I remember with my sister walking miles with our jugs to go fill up clean water, and we would wait online. And I was like 6 or 7 years old. I was very young, I remember, and just waiting online to fill up our jugs with water and then walking back and going up the stairs to the fifth floor, you know, and by the time I get there, I want to drink the whole entire jugs that I just filled up, you know. But it was very challenging, but at the same time, very eye-opening now that I look back, because it makes you appreciate those simplest things that we take for granted and the simplicity of just having clean water. I learned that very earlier on in my life, and I'm grateful for that.
Good, good. And also, it seems like... I want to get that microphone a little closer to you. But it seems like, you know, imagination was a huge, big deal for you. Like, trying not, as a way to cope, as a way to express yourself, that art is what you had. You mentioned a little bit about that. So you continue to expand on that. And how, during that time period, were you doing drawing at that age? Or?
Yeah, so in the Civil War, we didn't have electricity as well. So you didn't have TV. Like children now, they have TV, they have their video games. You know, I didn't have that. I had nature. I had the stars at night to look at and to just ponder and ask those big questions like, you know, what's out there, you know, beyond this planet? And these are the kind of thoughts that I was going through when I was little, just like drawing from nature, because I didn't have TV, you know. I had to, and I didn't even have toys, believe it or not. Wow. So I was just using my creativity a lot of the times, and using what surrounds me, and just me and my friends just, you know, running around whenever, like, it was quiet outside and safe. We would run outside in nature, I remember. And even now when I think back of my childhood, what really pops up, Vijay, is the idea and even a scent of the jasmines and the gardenias and all those things that I surrounded myself with as a child. And maybe that's what I focused on. I mean, I could have focused on the negative things that could be happening, you know, like, wait a minute, I went to bed hungry, you know, because there was a lot of times that I did go to bed hungry, that we didn't have enough food. But I choose to focus on the beautiful things that surrounded me, because there's a lot in life to look for in a positive way and draw your strength from that.
Yeah, and did you do a lot of reading when you were growing up, as you got older? And if so, what were the compelling philosophies that were taught to you about growing up, about love, and that shaped you as a person? Or
That's really, really good, Vijay. Spirituality and love for divine was very strong with me. Majority of my family members are nuns and priests. And even when I was a little girl, I wanted to be a nun, you know. And I remember, you know, that was my dream. I wanted to be a nun. I was very spiritual. I went a lot to the church with my family whenever we could. And eventually that wasn't part of my path, like, for me. But I remember a lot, like, just drawing a lot of the ideas of spirituality and from my families, because that was their background. And when I was little, because I did go to Catholic school, and they had a retreat in a monastery. And so when I was young, I would go to that retreat, and there was volunteers there that would teach us about breathing and yoga. And these are some of the early philosophies that I learned, different perspective of spirituality, that, you know, you could use these modalities to look within yourself, and not necessarily, like, a church or God could be within you anywhere in the world, you know, just finding that peace within yourself, that love within yourself, really was helpful, and it was a great modality for me to learn as a young child or child during that time.
Yeah,
you know?
It's so important to develop a love within oneself, for oneself, for one's family, for one's global community. And one thing builds off the other. Like, first you have to have a deep sense of self-love as you're expressing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, talk a little bit more about how you integrated that and balanced that with these challenges and changes that reflected in your life, and how, you know, as you grew up, as you started to develop, what specific incidents shaped you and what specific relationships were more central for your development? Yeah.
Yeah, so I would say the first thing that I learned from my parents, first of all, just to back up a little bit,
yeah.
is that when my father, one time, I'll tell you this quick story, my father's friend wanted to go to Syria to the American embassy to check on paperwork to see if he got them approved to go to America. And my father said to him, okay, fine, I'll go with you. I have paperwork, but there's no way anything has been approved. So his friends goes into the embassy, gets out, nothing. My father goes in and he gets out and he has like this big shock on his face. And he's like, they just told me I won the lottery to go to America. And they told me I have 15 days to make that decision. So 15 days is, do you agree? It's kind of like crazy to change your whole entire life.
Change your whole life is turning on a dime. Yeah.
Yeah. So 15 days. Our life was flipped upside down. And just to make this a little bit kind of like weird, my father said, I'm going to sleep on this to make the decision. And then he gets a call a couple of days after from his, because he was a police officer in Lebanon. He gets a call. He's like, from his job, he's like, we're going to give you a bonus. And it was the exact amount we needed to buy plane tickets for five people. Like, that we didn't have that. He didn't have that kind of money to buy tickets and be like, okay, I'm going to go to America now, you know? So it was kind of a sign for him, and they did that decision. They made that decision to bring us here. So that was my first lesson and my development in drawing that strength from my family, because it takes a lot of strength and courage and love for your family to kind of pave the way for them and their future generations. So again, going back, you know, tying it into the love of your family and sacrificing for your family. So I learned that very early on. I really am grateful for that. Then after that, some of the challenges I can tell you is that fast forward in 2013, my father got diagnosed with nasopharyngeal cancer, and it was definitely a challenging time, for everyone. And I was helping him, you know, with all the multidisciplinary approach of the doctors. It's not easy. And then, fast forward in 2016 and 17, I was diagnosed with Lyme disease, because during that time, it was so stressful for me. I was taking breaks during my job to go to the park and meditate, because I was trying to use meditation, you know, to cope with that, because that's something I learned early on in my childhood. And I didn't have the awareness that, hey, New Jersey is full of deer, by the way. Uh-huh. You're going to get a you know, possibly a tick. Like, I never checked myself. So anyone who's listening out there and knows people that go to the park in New Jersey and upstate New York, please check yourself.
Yeah.
You know, and then I was feeling already depressed. And then on top of the Lyme disease, it was adding more like difficulty emotionally and physically to me. But what I tell you, what I learned from that, VJ, is that I went back to the drawing board. I'm like, what did I learn when I was little? What did I cultivate about my resilience going through the war, you know? And all these, you know, characteristics that you can learn as you develop. And I decided not only to explore Western medicine, but I also explored Eastern medicine, where I was doing Qigong, and I was doing herbal medicine, and in combination with meditation, again, and just cultivating that, like, self-love. Because what I learned from that, VJ, is that you have to love yourself, even when you're caring for someone, like your loved one who's going through such a difficult time. You cannot forget about yourself. It is so important to love yourself and cultivate those strong roots within yourself, because without strong roots, any storm that can come toward you, it's going to knock that tree. So I learned that, you know, that was a big, big lesson for me during that time, because I was forgetting about myself. Like, I wanted to do everything I can for my father. I wanted him to heal, you know, but I didn't have control. There's some things you just don't have control over them. You know, it's just part of life. And loving oneself, and I can't repeat this enough, was one of the biggest lessons, to love myself and to care for myself.
Yeah, it seems like it's so important to remember that we're all part of this big picture of the world. They're all interconnected, and that, you know, our bodies, our health are so important, because, you know, we're not separate. We're all connected. And, you know, taking care of that is good practice for, and good, and the foundation upon which our compassion builds, you know, our compassion for others builds is by having compassion for ourselves.
Exactly.
So let's talk a little bit about the evolution. You talked a little bit about that, of your ideas about love. You started out with a, you know, kind of a very spiritual, religious background, and you started to evolve into yoga and meditation. Talk a little bit more about how these philosophies in your travels especially help guide your or mold your ideas about love. You know, as you started to travel around the world, how that kind of helped guide you, yeah.
So yeah, after the difficulties that I had, and I set a goal for myself that, you know, life, one of the biggest lessons that I learned from all these experiences is that life is too short and you just gotta live it. And I put a goal for myself while I was going through the healing, and after losing my father, you know, I said, you know, I have to live my life. I have to take control of my life. So I set these goals to start travel. And luckily I have a husband, you know, who's fully supportive of, you know, supporting me in any way, any which way he can. And I'm grateful for that. So having a strong supportive system, family, significant other is so important while you're going through these difficulties. So definitely I drew a lot of strength by having my husband being there for me and my family. And I first started out with, I joined this group from the UK, and they were meeting up in Peru. So I said, let me start out in Peru as my basis for the first travel. Mm. And when I arrived to Peru, I met with this lovely, lovely group. They were super supportive, super cool. And the whole itinerary said that we're going to be going to the sacred sites, you know, and high altitude. And excuse me, because I'm getting over a cold, so I'm going to take a sip of my tea.
Yeah, so it seems like you kind of, out of the years, you moved in different areas and such. Yeah, go ahead.
So, so I'm like, well, this is none of the things that I typically would do, but, you know, life is too short, so let me just get to it. So, went to the Apus, different mountains in Peru, such as Apu Asangate, Salcantay, Pachatusan, and Machu Picchu. And some of the philosophies that I learned in Peru are two main ones. One is Munai, and Munai means love. And Munai means love, and what I kind of compare it to is compassion with Buddhism. And Aini means reciprocity, which in Christianity we see that term, that concept of do unto other as you have them do unto you. So it's the reciprocal process, and they live their life, they weave that in their everyday life, love and reciprocity, not with just each other, with people globally, but with nature. Mm. And I really fell in love with those two concepts because they really spoke to me, and I loved how Aini, reciprocity, you could see like the Andean people use that into their ceremonies on their daily life in doing an energetic interchange of offering and not expecting anything in return, just, you know, that output of infinite love, infinite giving. And we see that in Buddhism when you're offering, you know, flowers and incense and, mm-hmm. again, an interchange of energy. And I know you have quite an extensive background in Buddhism as well, Vijay, so I don't know if you can speak toward that.
Yeah, I mean, definitely they have the models of the Buddhism Bodhisattvas that we're giving offerings to, so we can feel connected to those power sources of compassion and love, and allow them to, and always giving, you know, giving love, because giving is a practice that's essential for receiving. You know, in order to receive anything, we have to be able to give, you know?
Exactly. So, yeah. And what I learned also with Munai, love, they also talked about how beauty, when it comes to creativity, like, you know, we're creative people. They say, like, even just the beauty of the flower, the essence of the flower, the colors of the rainbow is Munai, is love. So beauty equals love as well. It stems from that. So I love that concept when I was in Peru, and just to learn about it and to weave it back into my community, into my practice of a creativity was very helpful and much needed at that time in my life as well.
Yeah, to tie it back now to the thread we're getting on now is that you have a practice of photography and art that people can go to your Instagram at Sade Studio, S-A-A-D-E Studio, your Instagram handle, and find a little bit more of your travel pics and and exploring that. But my question has to do with your artistic practice and whether or not it's a way to express, or how does that, what role does it play in love and expression of love? How's it helped you to be, have an artistic practice?
So I started out when I went to Rutgers University, I studied art history, and I also studied Eastern and Western religion and psychology. But I'm gonna tell you, like, art history was my favorite. I love learning about, like, different, you know, different painters and different centuries and different countries, and that kind of inspired me. When I took those art history classes, I said to myself, one day I'm going to be traveling the world looking at these art. Like, I don't want to just look at art in pages. Like, I want to actually travel and see art for myself and travel. And so I first started out with painting and with charcoal drawing, which I love. I love charcoal drawing because it's just, like, so natural, and I love it. I need to post some pictures on Instagram with my charcoal drawing. But then I fell in love with photography because photography also allows me to be in my heart space and in the moment. So when I'm traveling and, for example, I'm looking at an elderly woman sitting by the mountain and weaving, and I'm capturing that moment, and I'm sharing that moment with that particular subject, and then I'm posting it back on social media and sharing it with others, it becomes a reciprocal process and also a process of giving of yourself and sharing it with the world and trying to inspire other people to look into that lens of yourself and also be inspired to be like, hey, you know what? That really inspires me. Maybe I could do something like that. I can travel and I can see things with my own two eyes, not just like look at a documentary or look at the pages, like see it and experience it with all of your senses. So yeah. That's really been my vision, really, is to inspire people to travel and to share as much beauty as possible, because I think we're lacking beauty, as much beauty in this world, and it's so important that all of us share beauty of this world and so much to inspire other people that need to see that beauty.
Yeah, it's so important. Also, what I'm hearing from your story is the idea of connecting. You know, it's so easy to find the differences in things and see how we're all different, but to find the unity. You know, growing up, I understand you had people of various backgrounds that lived in Lebanon and different faiths and different communities, and you were able to kind of find the human love story, human love within all of that. And mm-hmm. It's so important to be able to connect with all the humanness of everyone. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, I mean, just to kind of touch base on that, as you said, like, well, growing up, I had friends, like I said, Armenian, French, Jewish, Muslim, and I did not see any differences, you know, growing up. Even though we grew up in the middle of a civil war, there was really no, I didn't see any differences. We were all the same, ultimately. Whether you are Muslim or Jewish or whatever religion it is, we are all the same, because for me, the basis of religion is love, ultimately, and love ties us and connects us all. So I just wanted to put that out there.
Yeah, it seems like we're touching in on what aspects of love are neglected by society or common misconceptions about love. I was going to ask a question about that. You know, the common narrative about love is so misguided in some ways, and a lack of focus on what's important, compassion. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's something that's underappreciated. You know, people think about love in the sense of a possessive or selfish love.
Exactly.
But what we seem to be touching in on is that self-care and is important for universal love. So that seems like self-care is the foundation upon universal love, whereas, like, you know, selfish love is like a negation almost of self. But if you expand a little bit more about how compassion perhaps is misconstrued, yeah.
I do feel, and I agree with you, Vijay, is that I see a lack of self-love and compassion in the world. As I travel more and more, I do try to kind of educate myself, and I see what's out there from my own point of view, not what the media is portraying. And I see that like in the way that we see the earth right now. You know, our action affects our surroundings, you know. It speaks for itself, like with our oceans, with pollution possibly, you know, with the overuse of plastic. But ultimately, self-love and compassion allows you to see things not just within you and not only light the candle within you, but also allows you to light the candle within other people and ignite that, and then also care about your surroundings. Like, wait a minute, this is our home. Like, we shouldn't be trashing it. Like, this is where we live. This is the place we're borrowing for our future generation. And it's so important that we take care of Mother Earth and we are mindful of the choices that we make every day. And every single person has the power to do that.
Yeah. And also, I want to bring up a thread we talked about prior to the show, but I was going to bring it up here, about how with self-love and self-compassion, acknowledging the dark places, acknowledging that we're human, that we make mistakes, and having love and compassion even for that, because it's so easy to be like, this model that we see things that, the perfect person, the model human, and, being hard on ourselves for our mistakes, being hard on ourselves for our fault failures, but also loving those failures, having self-love for those failures, and struggle, the struggle that we go through, and having love for that process seems to be important to you. And you've mm-hmm. talked a little bit about that and how your learning journey in that. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm human. It's an ever changing journey for me, and it's going to be a process. Of course, I'm not perfect, but I'm learning to love these imperfections of myself. For example, when I came to this country, I was 11 years old, and I fell into this depression because it was so difficult for my family. Like, my father just picked up any job, he was a mechanic, because he wanted to support us. He wanted to, and it was very difficult for them. So I took on a lot of their stress, and that got me down. And I'm sure a lot of people who come from different countries feel the same, because it's pressure. You're in a different environment. You have to learn the language very quickly. So it's a different world. And now looking back, I love that part of me that was depressed. I appreciate that part of me that was depressed, and I love me for going through that, because it taught me to love myself even more and to appreciate myself as a human being. I'm a human being having a human experience, and it's okay to be depressed. It's okay to cry. It's okay to fail. I've had many failures, and that's okay, because it teaches you to be even more resilient and more stronger and the unique person that you are. So it was a long process, and it still is, but I'm learning to cultivate that inner love for myself, because ultimately we have ourselves to support ourselves and then offer that as a medicine to others.
It's so important to remember, I think, that I'm hearing from you, what I'm hearing from you to restate and to kind of summarize or to give back, is that, in Hollywood and in media and the ways in which we digest information, it seems like, people are seeing product over process, and they're seeing the end result. They're seeing people succeed. They're seeing people produce materials. They're seeing people smiling all the time in the media, always having, happy, happy faces and successful. They're rich. They're whatever. And we have to remember that it's all a process, and that there's nothing wrong or there's nothing bad about crying or about having a negative experience, because those things lead to ultimately peaks and valleys, is ultimately where the human heart comes from. The human heartbeat comes from peaks and valleys. So we have to appreciate both of them and acknowledge both of them, that sometimes a valley turned the other way can be a peak. I don't know.
Exactly. And yeah. I remember mentioning that the other day when I was having a conversation with my friend. For the longest time I had this check thing, go to school, get good grades, get the nice car, get the nice house, and life is not like that. I realized at one point, like, that was not working for me. That checklist was not working for me, because I was living myself as a checklist. And life is more than that. Life is not linear like that. As you can see from my story, it's like in zigzags, know? Like, you have the ups, like you said, the downs, and that's okay. That's part of life. That's normal life. No one has it perfect. And from the outside, people might look at me now and be like, she has the perfect life. She has a good job and everything. They can see the outside. It's the tip of the iceberg. But what is under that iceberg is all the hardship you go through, And ultimately is, that's okay.
Yeah. And it seems like you had a very strong compass through all of this. You had a very strong compass to guide you through the dark areas and have your guiding light. But talk a little bit about your compass and what acted as your compass assist you in directing towards this vision you have for yourself and for your community. And how did that compass operate, or how did that compass help you?
So for me, the compass, I would tell you, is my heart. Yeah. It's very simple. It's been my heart and just listening to what feels intuitively right for me as a human being and right for me as a unique person, because I can't apply other people's compasses for me. Like, it's my life. It's different, you know, different circumstances. But I'm learning, especially like with the turning point with losing my father, really opened up my eyes that, you know, he worked all his life. You know, he was so dedicated to us, and I'm so grateful for that. But at the same time, he taught me also that I need to follow my own heart and love myself enough to do the things that I dream of. Like, what about my dreams? And during that incident, I did question myself a lot, which led me to the compass. You know, I questioned, like, what is the purpose of life? What is my gifts? What am I supposed to be doing here? Like, I did question a lot. And that's why I decided to go on journeys, because I wanted those questions answered. And I'm still on that journey, you know, and also, like, tying it back also, like, I was so lucky to have my community support, like the love of my husband and my family. Like, that was important, because that gave me also a strength to follow my heart as well.
Yeah, and it seems like you had a lot of role models in your father and your family to be able to help you find that embodiment of love, find that embodiment of self-love, self-care, and building towards that, towards the path you're on, to be able to follow your heart and follow your intuition. What other role models did you have to help you kind of get a sense of what it was that you want to embody? Was there any total role models or any outside role models or anything else that you want to talk about?
Yeah, I mean, I look for my role models. I look for my ancestors, my family, my parents, who kind of sacrificed a lot for us to bring us here. My husband, who laughs every day. He's very funny. He makes me laugh every day. Even when we're having a fight, he'll say something funny and we won't fight anymore. So my husband, my family, my friends, and also, ultimately, I learned that I am my own role model, and I own that, because, you know, going through those difficulties, you know, with the Civil War and the Depression, and even, you know, I don't know if I touched base on, I got a mysterious illness when I was a little girl. Going through that, of 15 days of suffering and coming through it, taught me all to also look within the compass within myself and to see myself as a role model also for myself. And of course, I had spiritual guides, you know, like, I look up to the Dalai Lama and to the teachings of Jesus, and all of that is, I draw the essence of love from all of these supporting systems, you know.
It seems like when you what I'm hearing from you also is that you're creating or using your imagination to create a version of yourself that is really true to your heart, and then slowly moving towards that, to embody that vision for yourself and of yourself. So what would you say is the practices or routines that you do daily that help you cultivate that, bringing more of a union between the ideal and the reality? What are the routines you have that help guide you through these potentially negative times and keep you on the path? Yeah.
Thank you for asking that question, Vijay. Every day I try to do a 15-minute meditation. I call it a compassion meditation. And I learned part of it, you know, I learned to combine it from a monk in Woodstock. In upstate Woodstock, there's a monastery, Buddhist monastery, and I learned a meditation from a monk there. And I kind of morphed it into my own compassion meditation that I do 15 minutes a day every morning. And then as I get out the door, I've kind of utilized a technique that I learned from an Indian shaman in Peru, where as I walk out the door to start my day, I say, today is going to be the best day of my life. Because guess what? Words and thoughts are so powerful that they're beings. You're calling that into your day, and you're setting the tone and energy for the day. So I like to start out my day in a positive way that way. So that's so important. These type of modalities, speaking and being mindful. Also, I try as much as I can throughout the day to be as mindful with the type of words and how I respond to different things, because I do work in a healthcare field now. And it could be very stressful. So it's important how to also be mindful of the type of thoughts you use and the type of words you use. But I think meditation is so crucial. And I know you went on a trip probably to where that you can speak more about meditation than me. But I do 15 minutes. That's all I do, 15 minutes a day. And it does tremendous work for me.
Yeah, I think that in my own practice, I try to visualize, myself on the hero's journey. So I try to think about it in terms of adventure, complex genre kind of thing. So in other words, like when I have to start the day, I'm like, I'm continuing on this journey that's bringing me through this. And even if there are negative things that happen, just like in a storyline narrative, challenges happen to the hero, and we have to just acknowledge that, this brings us through, that this is going to bring us through to the light and to the positivity, so that we go through that not with, we want the hero of a film or of a story to be fully invested in their life's journey, fully invested in their life struggle, so that then they can ultimately come out the other side more satisfied, more the richness of accomplishment happens through that struggle. And I think that being fully invested, for me, at least in my own practice, being fully invested in each daily struggle, being fully invested in each daily interaction helps me kind of think of it in those terms, and is there anything that you resonates with you, or what is it that what kind of narrative or what kind of story do you come up with that for yourself, and how does that, we still have, go ahead.
Yeah, so, and just to piggyback with that, I also do a lot of mantras.
Yeah,
And the Sanskrit mantras, yeah. I love Deva Pramal. I don't know if you've heard of her. She is incredible. I love her Gayatri mantra. That's one of my favorite. So I sing that every day, the Gayatri mantra. I sing it every day. And now she's doing like live shows, 108, an hour of doing the Gayatri mantra. So, and to your point, yes, it's important to see yourself as a storyline and to see that, you are the hero of your story, that you can overcome and see it in a positive light, that it's possible to overcome any difficulties that you might face and to stay calm in the midst of these storms. You can do it.
Yeah. So let's go back to your travels and the place you visited in 2018. And you mentioned a little bit about that, but let's go a little deeper into that. You believe you had a vision quest. So talking about the vision quest and how the particulars of in regards to travel, how this affected you.
So, again, because I've had all these questions about my life after losing my father, that was the turning point. Started out in Peru, and there was an incident in Peru when I want to tell you that story before I forget it. I was we got to Salkantay with the UK group there to Salkantay. And I was whole. They said, "Okay, well, we're gonna drop our bags, and we're gonna decide to go up the mountains next to the lagoon, Hamantai Lagoon, which is next to the, I think the iceberg or whatever it is." And so, like, I had no idea what I was getting myself into, and I'm like, "Oh, sure, yeah, no problem. We'll take a walk up there." So I drop my bag, and they're like, "Before we go up there, we want everyone to hold a rock that represents the old things in your life that you want to release and be thankful for. And when you get to the lagoon, you're going to throw it in the lagoon and grab another rock." So I said, "Yeah, that sounds pretty easy, right?" So I'm going, mind you, we're like on a high elevation. So I'm going up the mountain, and the guide was with me, and I was like, I couldn't breathe. Like, I mean, I've been working out and everything, but I couldn't breathe. It was so difficult. And I told the guide, "Look, I'm like running behind everybody else. Like, don't worry, just go. I'll catch up with everybody. Just, And then, so I don't know how long it took me, an hour and a half to get to the lagoon. But it was such a difficult process because literally I was fighting everything I've gone through. Everything that I was going through with, like, all the difficulties, like, even memories, like, from Lebanon, all came all at once. And I was kind of, like, going through it up the mountain. And a voice in my head was telling me, you need to quit. Like, you need to go back. There's no way you're getting up there. And I was like, you know what? I am going to get up there. So I'm going up there, and people go they went by me and came back, and they're looking at me like, wow, you're still going up the mountain? Like, that's pretty impressive, you know? And I'm like, I'm going to make it. So finally, I make it up there, and I turn around the corner, and I see this beautiful view of this lagoon by the mountain, right? And the glacier. And it's emerald green. And it took my breath away. Like, literally, I couldn't breathe. And I look at everybody else there from the group, and they're looking at me. We're getting ready to go. Like, they're ready to leave, you know? Mm-hmm. And I just got there. And I just started crying. Like, so I didn't know what emotions to have, but I started crying. And then one of the guide there, one of the Caro shamans, he took me to the lake, and he put water over my head. And he's like, if you could do this, you could do anything in your life. And that was really empowering. And then one of the guides there, he's like, don't remember to throw, you know, to throw the rock. So I threw that rock, giving it thanks to all the difficulties that it taught me. And I grabbed another rock with gratitude. So that was really a great experience to have during my travel.
Yeah, it's so important to understand that, you know, these moments in our life are ripe with empowerment possibilities, that, you know, moments of struggle, moments of overcoming that struggle, and putting into narrative empowerment that not giving up. And also when we're visited by memories, we're visited by, you know, kind of this voice that tells us you can't do it, being able to overcome. And you know, it's based on that strength, I think, of perseverance. And these are the values that we as human beings want to hold up, that we're persevering, that we're moving towards our goals, that we're creating the reality as it's happening, that we have the power, we have the freedom to make our story something very powerful. And it seems to me that this story illustrates that you're able to use a moment where doubt and hesitation and transform it into something like a coal becomes a diamond, you know, like,
yeah,
be able to really put that strength of character and say, I'm going to do this and capture that moment. So it's very good. Yeah, let's talk a little bit more about what your plans are, you know, for 2019 and beyond.
Mm-hmm.
We're at 45 now, but we have a little time, yeah.
Yeah, so 2019, I'm very excited for 2019. I'm planning on going back to Peru, because there's other sacred sites that I would like to visit and learn from and draw more inspiration from. Specifically with my photography, I'd like to capture more photography this time, because last time I went, I was really focused on my questions that I had. But this time I really want to focus on photography and capturing a lot of moments there. So definitely keep up with my Instagram once I post more pictures this year. I'm also planning to go back to Lebanon. I think it's important to go back to my roots. And I'm planning to go there with my husband in May to Lebanon. And I'm also working with collaborating for 2020, a women's retreat in Peru, a creative women's retreat. So that's going to be down the line. But that's definitely, I'm planting the seeds now, and that's something I'm going to be working on for the future. So I'm very, very excited. And ultimately, like I said before, my vision and my goal is to create more beauty and have people look within these beautiful things that they see, so they can look within themselves and within their heart space.
Thank you. So to remind listeners, this is Radio Free Brooklyn, the What is Love show. I'm VJR Nathan. I'm substitute hosting for Sasha Sugar while she's away. We're talking a little bit about love. Pauline Saad Chade is our Lebanese-American artist, photographer, and world traveler who's here with us today. You know, we're talking a little bit about her journey in and with love, you know, her journey, the challenges she's faced over the years, growing up in Lebanon and continuing on. So anything else is coming up for you as far as, like, you know, what's coming up for you now? We still have, like, 12 more minutes, but I have some time to play a song. But, yeah, what's coming up for you, yeah.
What's coming up is that I'm collaborating with an artist, very talented artist, Rochelle. I posted it's called Share the Love. So mm-hmm. Come on, I'm continuing to share the love with everyone. So there's a women-only art creative art event that's happening in New York that I'm going to be part of that. And the event is posted on my Instagram, Sade Studio, Saade Studio. So if you really you want to be part of that, certainly it's a women-only event, but certainly we're going to expand it in the future. And so take a look at that. And I just want to tell you, I'm here to inspire women and just all to travel, to take the opportunity to spread your wings, to be empowered, to travel, to explore, and to share your love and your heart with everybody, because everyone wants to hear your unique self and what you have to share with the world. So don't be shy and find your inner power to do that.
Thank you. Thank you. So as we go out, why don't you tell us some recommendations for, you were talking a little bit of art history and all this kind of thing. And what are some of your favorite art pieces that really come out to you that have lived with you over the years? Any specific artifacts of an art or in anywhere else?
I love Jimmy Nelson. He's a photographer, travel photographer. And Robert Linson, I have him posted on my Facebook. But these are two photographers that I really look up to. I've been really following their work recently. They're photographing indigenous people. And it's something that I'm really diving into right now, the indigenous issue, and also the respecting of our water and having clean water out there. It's so important that we educate ourselves about this issue and also educate ourselves about the indigenous community. So I really, really love their work. They have work from different indigenous group and from Bhutan, from Mustang. It's just such a beautiful work that I'm going to go ahead and post a few pictures of them on Instagram and with their links, so you can totally go check it out and see if you feel called to look further into it.
Yeah, it's so important to remember that all cultures and all human cultures, all these cultures have so much to offer, and not to, it's so easy to think, moving forward and dismiss the wisdom and the deep roots that we have in indigenous cultures and to value the wisdom there. Yeah,
I mean, absolutely. I don't know if I have time to mention this, but yeah. I went last year to Costa Rica, to Arenal, and I visited the Maluku indigenous group, and they took us into their land. They showed us medicinal plants and how they maintain the land there to draw these medicinal plants. And they cultivate the cacao from there. And they told us about like how they're trying to gain part of their land back. And it's just so important to know that these things are happening all over the world. And it's good to educate yourself in person. So that was pretty inspiring.
Thank you. Thank you. So you're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. Radio Free Brooklyn is a 501c3 nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a free and open platform to our community and promote media literacy, education, and free expression. We rely primarily on donations from listeners like you. So to help support our mission, we invite you to make a one-time donation or monthly pledge at radiofreebrooklyn.org/donate. Every cent helps us to continue to stay on air. So please support independent community media by pledging whatever you can afford. All contributions are tax deductible to the fullest extent of the law. Again, that's radiofreebrooklyn.org/donate. Radio Free Brooklyn is proud to announce that we'll be launching an after-school program for local teenagers in 2019. To learn media literacy through media making using a hands-on approach guided by local professionals. If you'd be interested in participating or even donating to this program, please go to radiofreebrooklyn.org/afterschool. And remember, all donations are tax deductible. A very important on-air read is going to be this Monday, tomorrow, February 11th at 9 p.m. Join us for a night of comedy and storytelling as comedians perform material informed by their experiences with sexual assault. Come out for yourself. Come to Asking For, presented by Radio for Brooklyn this Monday, 11th at 9 p.m. It'll be a very important catharsis with comedians Allison Klempt, Lizzie Cassidy, Christina Galson. I'm sorry if I butchered these names. Joseph Roberts, Vanetta, and Jen Welch. The show is at Pine Box Rock Shop. So come for some good consensual fun at 211 at 9 p.m. At 12 Gradin Street in Brooklyn. Okay. So, anything, are we directing people to your Instagram, Pauline, Saad Studio? And any last thoughts and closing thoughts as we start to go out?
Yeah, I just want to say thank you so much, Vijay, for this opportunity, the opportunity to share the love with everyone and to know that we are all connected. We are all love. And I'm so grateful for this opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you. So the What is Love show airs every Sunday at 2 p.m. Also, my normal show, I'm substitute hosting for Sasha Sugar, who is away right now, but my normal show is, my usual show is Truth to Power Show on Radio Free Brooklyn, which is every Monday at 8 a.m., which we broadcast on Thursdays at 9 a.m. So originally airs on Mondays at 8 a.m., and then it'll rebroadcast on Thursdays at 9 a.m. on RadioFreeBrooklyn.org. And if you're listening on your computer, you can free yourself up by going to RadioFreeBrooklyn.org/iPhone or /Android to get the mobile apps. And also, if you want to find out more about our information, about our newsletters, about our programming, upcoming RFB events, sign up for our newsletter to keep up to date with new programming, upcoming RFB events, interviews, ticket giveaways, special offers, and RFB swag, and more. Sign up at RadioFreeBrooklyn.org/newsletter. And thank you so much. I'm going to be going out with Imagine Dragons, the song Dream, because I think that it's so important to remember that the dreamlike qualities of everything, the dream qualities of all this world. This world is such a, I'm just trying to pull this thing up. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
And to also get messages from dream, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I draw a lot of my creativity and my inspiration from my dreams. So dreams are so crucial to also to our development. So pay attention to your dreams.
Thank you. Thank you.
Dark and I'm right on the middle mark, and just in the tear of everything that rises below the surface. And I watch from a distance 17, sure the others' dreams of being golden and on top. It's not my head, so much there instead of all the colors that I saw. We crystallized, oh, the prettiest of lights that hang the hallways of the home. And the cries from the strangers out at night, they don't keep us up at night. We have the curtains drawn and closed. We catch the knots in our laces, all it races. And we go back to where we moved out to the places, all it races.
Tune in to Radio Free Brooklyn Tuesday.